This program may contain content which is suitable for listeners over the age of 18 only. Discretion is advised. This is Room 104.
FM 104.
It's Trish here on Room 104, and right now I have Professor David Nutt from Mind and Medicine Australia to talk us through the developments they have made of psilocybin and MDMA treatments in Australia. Professor David Nutt, welcome to the show.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Wonderful. Now, David, first, would you mind telling us about your background in medicine and how you got into the field?
Well, I'm a psychiatrist, and I've been doing psychiatry for 40 years, and I've treated a lot of people, but I've seen a lot of people not do that well on current medications. And about 15 years ago, we started exploring the possibility of using psilocybin and MDMA to treat mental illness. And we're pleasantly surprised. The effects were really both powerful, but also almost immediate. You know, one or two doses could produce kind of almost a sort of step change in people's depressions or their addictions. And because of that, I've started helping My Medicine Australia to develop programs in Australia, because I work in England, but I advise them in Australia.
What is Mind Medicine Australia? What's their main focus, goal, and organization? What does it do?
It's a charity that was set up by people who'd actually seen the benefits of psychedelics and who wanted to roll it out, who wanted to give access of these medicines to Australians, because people think Australia is quite a progressive country, but actually it's quite backward in some ways. It's quite conservative. And so they set up this charity to set up training, and I do quite a lot of teaching for them, but also to persuade the doctors there that the results that we've been getting and people in America have been getting with these medicines are going to be valid in Australia. And also to encourage the regulators there to be sympathetic to the fact that there are patients who are not getting better on current meds, but who should be given a chance with this stuff. And one of the things people don't realize in Australia, just as in Ireland and as in Britain, the regulations on these medicines are such that they've been set. These drugs are illegal to stop people using them recreationally, but that hasn't worked. People still use them recreationally. But what it's done is denied access to patients. And that seems completely the wrong way around. You know, why would you deny patients access to something like psilocybin or MDMA, which could be made available in a controlled medical situation? It's not going to be sold on the streets. It's going to be used by doctors and therapists. And so why shouldn't that happen? And of course, it's not happening because they've been banned for so long that people have kind of lost sight of their potential and really haven't been able to think sensibly about them.
I think what it is, there's a fear that's being created around psychedelics, because from as long as I know, there is this image that they're dangerous, they can affect you mentally, and you know, you won't be able to recover from it. But the difference here is that they're being administered in a safe, medically controlled environment.
Well, the first thing to say is that most of the myths, most of the claims of damage from these drugs have actually been grossly exaggerated. These drugs were banned for political reasons, not for health reasons. And of course, the victims of this, the collateral damage is to the patients. And as you say, if you administered them in a controlled clinical setting, they're way less harmful than many of the other drugs we use on patients. Mm.
So tell us about the developments that you've been making then. So what does psilocybin and MDMA, what are these treatments? What are the results of these treatments?
And it's not just me. I want to emphasize, you know, there are groups in the States as well doing this. Mm. But if you take psilocybin, that's the active ingredient in magic mushrooms. And we discovered and replicated now by others that one or two doses can get people out of resistant depression. People have been depressed for 20 years can escape from it. And a few of them, some of them are now well 8 years after a single dose, which is amazing.
Wow.
In most cases, the depression comes back. But that's because depression is a sort of very difficult to treat disorder. But these are the most powerful treatments of resistant depression there's ever been. A single dose can give you, long lasting recovery. And what's really interesting is that it's not just that we know that clinically now, but we know what goes on in the brain. We can see that these drugs change the brain and they turn the brain away from depression. They turn it into a more positive way of being. And then when you look at MDMA started off a lot of people don't realize this. Before it got into the club scene, the rave scene, MDMA was being used as a therapy, a medicine for psychotherapy, for counseling. And then just because it was legal, it started being used recreationally, and then it got banned and no one cared about the fact that patients could benefit. It just got banned. But there was a group in America called MAPS, and they carried on. They've been fighting for 30 years, raising money from as a charity to do a trial of MDMA in post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD, people who have been traumatized by car accidents or by being in the military or being raped or whatever. And they've shown that MDMA treatment, usually two or three administrations over the course of, say, a three-month psychotherapy program, can produce way better effects than any treatment we have today, with a large majority of people becoming cured. And they're now pushing that through to become a medicine in America. And I'm hoping it, you know, then the Europeans and the Brits will accept that data and allow it here. But what we did was something rather different. We started working with people who were drinking because they've been traumatized. And it's very common that people with PTSD turn to alcohol to deaden the pain and the misery and the stress of their lives. And we discovered, yes, you could, it would actually, it was also a very powerful treatment. Just two doses, a few weeks apart, you know, as part of an abstinence-based alcohol program, people, the vast majority of the group, it was a small number, it was 14, but 10 of them basically stopped drinking over 9 months. Remarkable effect. So that's very exciting. You know, we've had, you know, we've kind of, you know, returned into the medical arena, these medicines, which actually previously people knew were useful, but were banned because of, as I say, political reasons and a hatred of young people having fun.
Now, one of the other things that constantly get mentioned is the drug's addictive quality. So are you saying that when it's administered safely in a medically controlled environment, the doses won't cause addiction?
These drugs have never caused addiction. Mm. I mean, this is again, one of the deliberate misrepresentations. Psychedelic drugs do not cause addiction. And do you know who told us that? The American Army. In the 1950s, the American Army decided to find out how they could protect American soldiers against the possibility of a Russian attack with LSD. And they discovered that if you give the soldiers LSD for a couple of days, dose every day for a couple of days, the effect of LSD disappears. People don't crave it. The soldiers don't want it. But if you give them more LSD, it doesn't work. So it's exactly the opposite of addictive. You get tolerant, but people don't know that. People assume it's addictive because they say these are dangerous drugs. They're not dangerous at all, but everyone assumes because they've been called dangerous, they must be addictive. MDMA, well, you know, maybe if very few people get craving for MDMA again, it's the biology of MDMA and the biology of psychedelics is largely through the serotonin system. And the serotonin system in the brain is the anti-addictive system. Mm-hmm. It's the dopamine system, which drugs like cocaine and crystal meth work on, that are addictive. So these are anti-addictive drugs. In fact, there are studies now in the States showing you can use psilocybin to help people stop smoking and to help people stop drinking. You know, they're anti-addictive.
And has there been clinical trials to see how the drugs work on patients? Like, has there been active clinical trials?
Absolutely. There have been. Now, we've done over 100 patients in our clinical trial. And we can show that they work. And we can see in their brains, by scanning their brains, we can see how they work. You know, it's incontrovertible now. These drugs do work, and they're very safe. So of the many hundreds of we've put normal, healthy volunteers through, we're not seeing craving. We're not seeing addiction. We're not seeing any unwanted effects. In a right setting, in a sensible, safe medical setting, they seem to be very, very well tolerated. They don't lead to enduring problems. I mean, obviously, if you're out in somewhere very dangerous and you're taking a mind-altering drug, well, you can come to harm. I mean, you know, absolutely crazy to go and take these drugs, or particularly psychedelics, if you're sitting on top of a cliff. but in a hospital bed, they're very safe. And that's why they should be medicines. They should never have been stopped being medicines. Yeah, hang on, maybe forced quit will work.
So what do you think then is the long-term objective? Would you like to see this being administered worldwide throughout different facilities? Or is there more studies that need to be done before it gets to that stage? Because obviously, if it does have such positive effects and benefits, we would want to see this, you know, worldwide.
Well, things are rolling quite fast. So since our first study was published in 2016, that's only, 6 years ago in depression, over 440 companies have been set up to try to develop psilocybin for depression. Wow. So there's a massive explosion of research interest. There have been centres set up for psychedelic research in Australia, in Canada, in America and Britain. There's the European one being set up as well. So there's a massive explosion in interest in work. The most remarkable thing of all is that the state of Oregon in the US, in the last election, when they got the Biden victory election, they voted to make magic mushrooms available as therapy in the whole of Oregon within 2 years, so next year. So it's moving very fast. And the problem we have actually is getting enough therapists trained up to keep up with the demand. It's really almost certain that psilocybin, magic mushrooms and MDMA, they will almost certainly both be medicines in the Western world within the next 5 years, which is great for patients.
That's pretty incredible. One of the things I've heard, and as a psychiatrist yourself, most therapists would say, you know, therapy is the way forward and not drugs. Where do you stand on that?
I should have made it clear. This is a very, very important point. It isn't just drugs. Mm. It's drugs plus therapy. We call it psychedelic assisted therapy. So I should explain a little bit more how it works. We embed the drug therapy in psychotherapy. There's always therapists, but when people take the drug, they always have one or sometimes two therapists with them. And the therapists help them go through the experience. But also, and this is the most important thing, after they've had the experience, the next day, the therapists are there to help them make sense of it and to carry on helping them develop better insights. So it's very much a combination of medicine and psychotherapy, bringing them both together to maximize each other.
Okay, I think that's definitely a clear point that needed to be made, because I wasn't really sure 100%. So they're working in tandem and not separately.
Yes, and we think the way it works is this. We think that the medicine breaks down the patterns of thinking which are destructive and negative, and then the therapy then can come in to a mind which is fresh and help people come to terms with what's gone wrong in the past. And did you have, if you've been depressed for 20 years and suddenly you're not depressed, you've got a lot of things to deal with. You've got relationships to deal with, jobs you might not have done. There's all sorts of things. So the therapy helps people get back in, you know, they're in their brains in the real world. Now they've got to get their mind in the real world too.
Okay. So what else have you guys been working on? Is there anything else that might be groundbreaking, or is that a well-kept secret?
No. Well, we are working on two things at present. I mean, there's also ketamine. Now, ketamine has been around for about 10 years as a treatment for depression. And ketamine's legal, well, at least sort of. It's because it is actually an anesthetic. So we're also using ketamine now to help people who can't get access to psilocybin and MDMA, which are just still research tools. So you can use ketamine clinically. And one of the things we are thinking of doing is setting up a ketamine clinic in Dublin, maybe next year. So try to make it available in Ireland as well. But we can also potentially, now we know the science of these drugs, we can also begin to think about, can we get new ones or better ones? And there's quite a lot of research going on about trying to improve on the efficacy and also the timing of these drugs. So for instance, a psilocybin medical trip lasts about 5 to 6 hours. That's quite a long time, and for the therapist as well as for the patients. Maybe we could make a shorter acting version. It could last for a couple of hours, like a ketamine treatment. And that would be less demanding for patients, less demanding for therapists, and also more cost-effective, because you could perhaps do two people a day rather than one a day. Mm. So you could roll it out to more patients.
And if you wanted to be a part of the study, could you volunteer?
There are studies going on. Yes, in you can. I think, now I'm going to be a bit careful here, because I'm not entirely sure what the the regulations are now that we're no longer in Europe. But if you live in Northern Ireland, you can. We've got someone from Northern Ireland already on our trial of psilocybin for anorexia nervosa. And we've also got trials going on in OCD and in pain syndrome. So yes, if you look on the Imperial College website, you can potentially sign up for those trials. We're not doing any trials in depression at present because they're all being now done by commercial companies.
So if listeners were seeking more information about this, where should they go?
Well, if you're living in Ireland and you go on to the Psychedelic Research Centre at the Imperial College, which I lead. You also go on to there's a website called drugscience.org.uk, which is a charity I set up, and you'll find a lot of information there about these therapies. And if you're in Australia, of course, then you go onto the Mind Medicine Australia website, which has got a lot of very good information and training schemes, etc.
One thing you touched on there as well, Professor, was that you saw an 8-year gap before people were getting affected by symptoms again. Do you think that is across the board? Would that be kind of the standard rate of time?
No. I think that's okay. I think there's a best case scenario is that people can be cured, but that tends to be in people who say that their depression was provoked by a single event. You know, maybe a divorce or losing their job or a child dying. Something that they can work, you know, an event that they can work with and overcome and get some kind of closure. A lot of people with chronic depression were traumatized in childhood and through neglect or abuse. And then, you know, they've been depressed then ever since they were babies. And that depression seems to be more invasive. It's kind of commandeers more of the brain thinking. So for those, we're probably going to have to be giving a treatment, repeated treatments to sort of push it down, keep pushing it down. So eventually, hopefully, it'll go away.
Okay. And on that note, Professor David Nutt, thank you so much for speaking to me, and all the best with the rest of the studies and the trials. And hopefully this is something we can see worldwide very soon. Thank you so much.
Been a pleasure, Tricia. Thank you.
This is Room 104.
FM 104.